The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you. A lot of interesting things are going on in the news right now. As you've been watching this week, a lot of stuff on healthcare in terms of what's happening. If you've been kind of thinking about this, it's not only about conditions or preconditions, but also insurance and all the other kind of matters that are impacting people with the Affordable Care Act, or what people call Obamacare, and maybe transitioning over to Trump Care. But part of that may be impacted is going to be mental health. And we wanted to talk about that today. Not a lot of people are aware, but this is Mental Health Month and Mental Health Awareness Month. And we're going to be talking about that. Included with this debate is the coverage of mental health. And as anybody has been watching, mental health is a growing situation in terms of people being concerned about it, whether it be law enforcement, whether it be our veterans, whether it just be our general population. At some point in time, everybody will deal with the mental health situation. And we want to bring that awareness to what's going on. I've got Ron Homburg on. He's a senior policy advisor at an organization called the National Alliance of Mental Illness. They're an organization we're going to find out more about, but they are covering the issues when it comes to mental health. And Ron, thank you for being on Fed Access.
Oh, my pleasure, Derek. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Ron, give us a little background about your organization. And let me just give the website. It's NAMI.org. If anybody wants to check it out, a lot of great resources on there. But tell us about the National Alliance of Mental Illness and tell us about what you guys do.
Okay, thank you. So we are very much a grassroots organization. We were created in a variety of communities, basically families who came together in the 1970s, families primarily of people, of loved ones with mental illnesses, to basically advocate for better services and also do a lot of community education and try to have an impact on better responses to conditions that, frankly, have always been the subject of a lot of misunderstanding and stigma and prejudice. So, from those few community organizations, we have grown over the years into a national organization with over 1,000 affiliates in every state across the country, in the district as well. We're focused on three things: advocacy, education, and support. Our members are very passionate about the issues. They tend to be people who either live with mental illnesses themselves or are the families of such individuals. So, they get very engaged in issues, and certainly at a time like this when Congress is debating, the future of the Health Care Act, they're particularly engaged.
You know, when we look at this and looking at mental health, you've been around this. I know, Ryan, you told me you have a background in counseling as well. What has been the change throughout either your career and just throughout the change of even the organization of is it pronounced NAMI?
Correct. NAMI. Okay. Yeah,
NAMI. What's been the change in terms of the outlook on mental health? I mean, there have been, and I've been in counseling too, and when we talked about this, I know at one point in time that was a big stigma. The mental health dynamic was almost a deal breaker in a lot of different, whether it be careers or a number of different things. Counseling, I know I spent time in the military, that mental health was not really talked about as much anymore. Some of that's changed. What have you seen the change in terms of mental health?
Yeah, no, I think you put it very well. I mean, when I started in the 80s, actually late 70s.
Don't date yourself, Ron.
Unfortunately, the years don't lie.
But, I know,
but
right?
When I started, I mean, mental health conditions, mental illness was very much in the shadows. It wasn't something that was talked about very much. Wasn't viewed, when we talked about health care, we weren't thinking about above the neck. We were thinking below the neck, right?
Right.
And I think that's changed over the years. And while we still have a long way to go, I think people are much more knowledgeable now about mental health and even in some cases more accepting of people who may have mental health conditions. And, you know, I attribute that to a number of things, but certainly folks like, you know, Patrick Kennedy and some prominent, you know, people from Hollywood and athletes and others who've stepped up and talked about their own mental health struggles and I think have made people understand that, you know, we're not talking about, medical conditions in many cases that are not different from heart disease, cancer, diabetes, only they impact on the brain or on how we feel on a day-to-day basis. So, having said that, you know, we still have a long way to go, and unfortunately, mental illness is talked about the most when something really horrific happens, an act of violence. That is relatively rare, but that's when people really think about mental illness. So, you know, we're constantly battling to, you know, sort of set the record straight that mental illness does not necessarily equate with violence, and in most cases it doesn't. That people with mental illnesses are more often the victims of violence than the perpetrators of violence, and that people who struggle with mental health conditions with appropriate treatment and services are very capable of recovery and living productive, meaningful lives like everybody else.
You know, when we think about this and kind of going forward, now we've got Mental Health Month, in which I'm glad that we have all these awareness dynamics, because I remember a time that this wasn't the case. When we look at Mental Health Month, what is that about? I mean, what are we looking at in terms of kind of bringing the awareness to mental health and then kind of going forward to take these stigmas away?
Yeah, it's a month designed to get Americans to really think about mental health and to learn about mental health conditions, to become better informed, and also to get involved. Whether it's with their own family member or a friend, I think most of us would be hard pressed to when we really think about this, we would be aware of someone in our family or someone who we know very well who has struggled with mental health symptoms. And how we respond to those individuals can make all the difference. I mean, if, like with any other illness, if a person feels shunned and stigmatized, they're going to be less inclined to seek help, and that's going to impede their recovery. So this is a real opportunity for us to have conversations in our communities, you know, our churches and synagogues, our schools, about mental health and also what to do, how to identify someone who may be struggling with mental health symptoms, and how to help those people, most importantly.
You know, I see the thing to talk about kind of take the stigma free pledge. When we talk about stigma free and kind of taking that pledge, what are we talking about when we look at that?
Again, designed to sort of sensitize people, mm-hmm. that how we react, you know, when you think about it, we still speak in a pretty cavalier, loose fashion about mental illness.
Right.
Sometimes we're all maybe guilty of that a little bit, but in terms of our day to day language, in terms of the movies that we watch, in terms of the conversations that we have with folks, that we need to really be more mindful of the fact that even though the old saying sticks and stones break my bones, you know, words can never hurt me. Well, when it comes to mental illness, I think words can hurt people, particularly if they're thoughtless or stigmatizing, if they reinforce already pre-existing prejudices.
Right.
So that's really what that's all about. That all of us can do something to create a world that's more accepting of people who may be experiencing mental health symptoms, and to try to encourage those people to get help, to make those people feel that others care about them.
You know, I was really, really happy to see something on the site that you guys have. And again, people can find the website at NAMI.org, and you'll see Mental Health Month right at the beginning. But I was really, really happy to see something, Ron, where it's talk about college and mental health. That seems to be, and I think as we engage, not even college, but just young people, we're seeing, you know, a lot more engagement, but I think we need to see more with the younger generation. Would you agree?
Definitely. And you know, it is particularly important because we know that the age of onset, the emergence of symptoms oftentimes occur in late teens and early 20s, right when someone is in college. So our college campuses certainly need to be prepared to respond to students who are experiencing mental health needs, whether they're related to day-to-day stress or maybe indicative of something more serious, the onset of a more serious illness like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, and how their fellow students respond is so important, too. We know there's been a slew of suicides on various college campuses around the country.
Right.
And, you know, that those are terrible tragedies. You know, these are young lives that are just starting out. And, again, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and this is also a big difference, Derek, that 30, 40 years ago, we tended to look at these conditions, particularly the more serious conditions, as sort of hopeless. And if a person could be helped to live safely outside of a hospital or a jail and prison, that was a good thing. But now I think we realize that people can recover and do recover, even people with the more serious diagnoses. So early identification, early intervention is so very important, and that's why I think these efforts focused on college campuses are so important.
We're talking to Ron Hohnberg. He is a senior policy advisor at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can find their website at nami.org. Such an important topic that we're talking about, mental health, mental illness, how to treat it, how to get rid of the stigmas on it. But then we're going to also be talking about how some policy is being made, how some laws are being impacted. We're going to talk about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and now what we think about Trump Care and everything else, and how this may be impacting mental health and mental illness and the treatment of this. These are very, very serious situations that are going on in terms of the law, and we want to kind of go into that. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about an important topic. We've been talking about mental health, mental illness, and talking about how to deal with it. Talk about how our society right now is trying to move away from the stigmas. Talking about an important issue because it's Mental Health Month right now. It's an awareness month to talk about mental health, the issues, and really kind of what used to be what we thought it was an untreatable problem, where it used to be almost a problem that was ignored sometimes. Or there was a big stigma with people now kind of coming out of the shadows and how to deal with it. But there's a lot of different things that are going on. Legislation that's being passed. There's issues in the veteran community. There's issues in the law enforcement community, on the college campuses and everything else that we're dealing with mental health issues. And this is an important topic, and we want to be aware of it right now. We're talking about this with Ron Hohnberg. He's a senior policy advisor at the National Alliance for Mental Illness. They're on mental illness, I should say. They're a great organization, an alliance of different organizations that deal with mental health. You can find them at nami.org, and we're having this conversation right now. Ron, you know, this has been an interesting week right now. You know, the repeal of Obamacare, the repeal of the ACA, and replace it. What's in terms of when we're looking at this and you know, this new legislation that they're talking about putting in place and everything else, what is the impact on mental health if kind of the new stuff is passed, if it gets past the Senate or anything else? What will be the impact?
Well, Derek, unfortunately, there's no way for me to sugarcoat this. Last year, Congress prioritized, actually, even though I think it's been well documented that Congress hasn't exactly been bipartisan the last few years.
I think so.
Last year, they actually agreed on two major pieces of legislation. One was focused on treating the opioid epidemic in this country, terrible opioid epidemic, which I'm sure your listeners are, and I know you are very aware of.
Without question.
And then the other major piece of legislation was a mental health bill introduced originally by Congressman Tim Murphy from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And that bill was really the first effort to sort of comprehensively look at how the how the federal role in mental health services could be beefed up, both in terms of resources and some changes to how programs are structured. Put resources into what we call evidence-based practices. Both of those bills passed, and today Congress appears to be, well, at least the House appears to be poised to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And I would argue, and I think the numbers bear this out, that people with mental illnesses or substance abuse problems are those who stand to be hurt the most by these changes. If you look at the numbers, let me just give you an example. One out of three people added to the Medicaid rolls through Medicaid expansion in the 34 states that have expanded Medicaid have mental health or substance use conditions. And if you just look at mental illness, one out of five. Those are staggering numbers that we're talking in the millions. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, included a list of essential health benefits for people who obtain health insurance through the marketplaces, the exchanges, the state exchanges. Mental health and substance use disorder benefits were one of the essential health benefits identified. That was a huge victory for us. It was, for the first time, it was a leveling of the playing field in terms of coverage of these conditions and health insurance plans. If Congress passes the legislation that's before them today, it sets the stage to basically strip away all that progress. And in many respects, renders the legislation they passed last year meaningless. And that's very, very unfortunate. Can Obamacare be improved? Have there been some problems with Obamacare? Sure, but in many respects, it was a major step forward, and it was particularly a major step forward for people with mental health conditions or substance use conditions. And I think it would be a shame if politics are allowed to supersede good policy. If the law is not perfect, try to fix it, but don't blow it up, and particularly don't blow it up with something that does not seem to be a good replacement. There's talk about creating these state high risk pools. It's pretty well documented that the high risk pools really don't help people all that much who have chronic health conditions. Even if it gives them a means of having some insurance coverage, the types of services that they're going to need may not be covered. And even if they are covered, they're going to be so expensive that people can't afford them. We're talking about many folks who are very, very low income here. And I would, further point out that when we're talking about mental illness, these are recovery is really dependent not just on medical treatment, not just on medications, but also rehabilitation and case management services. So, I know I didn't sugarcoat that. But that's the reality I think we're facing here.
And I didn't want you to, Ron. I wanted you kind of to look at it from a real perspective. But I guess my concern of it is that, and we've talked about mental health being such it's becoming more prevalent. Even when we have whether it be shootings or we have a number of different situations in society, it all goes back to mental health. And it's not just the heightened news dynamic, but mental health can be anything from a temporary situation where somebody's just dealing with a traumatic or a depression or whatever, all the way to long-term schizophrenia or anything else. But given that it's become such an important topic, I'm just trying to figure out why would, our legislators begin pulling back when we've made so much progress? I mean, where does that come from, Ron? Do you know, are the insurance companies battling this? Or, where is it coming back that we're moving backwards?
I think the insurance companies, frankly, are not comfortable with the idea of repealing Obamacare. They'd like to see certain fixes, but they're not comfortable with the idea of repealing. Derek, it seems to me, I'm not the world's smartest person or the world's most political person, but it seems to me to be politics. And, one of the things we say about mental illness is that it's an equal opportunity disease. So, mental illnesses impact whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, a liberal or conservative, you know, the statistics are about the same. And many of our members, because we're a grassroots organization, it's the beauty of being a grassroots organization. Many of our members are Republicans. So, you know, this is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. This is a matter of, you know, what constitutes good policy, and it's a matter of what constitutes, you know, the right thing to do for vulnerable people. And I'm not sure that, you know, we've really peeled back the layers and, you know, decided as a country what our goals are. If our goal is to have a better health insurance system and to make sure that more people have access to the care that they need, passing legislation that I think is going to create more barriers to people getting care is not the direction to go.
Right, right. You know, I look at it from a perspective of, you know, what kind of care do we want to give all our citizens, Ron? I mean, and we've seen that, you know, mental health also impacts physical health, right? I mean,
and
I mean, I think as we start to peel back the layers, and I think both me and you know from kind of being in the profession a little bit, is that if there's any impact when we kind of talk about a lot of times the physicality, a lot of times when a person is not mentally feeling the right way, they don't take care of themselves.
And yeah,
causes more problems. No, go keep on going. Go ahead.
Yeah, my apologies. So yeah, we always say mental health is integral to overall health. And, you know, you can look at it from really two perspectives. One, people who have medical conditions, you know, someone who is struggling, you know, who's undergoing cancer treatment or trying to recover from a heart attack. There are oftentimes mental health consequences, high rates of depression or anxiety that have to be addressed. But we also know that people who have the more serious mental illnesses of a chronic nature oftentimes experience high levels of physical related physical health problems, cardiovascular disease, you know, respiratory illnesses, metabolic disorders, sometimes frankly related to some of the treatments that they've had, and sometimes related to lifestyle issues, you know, high rates of smoking, for example. So you limit access to mental health care, you're impacting negatively on the course of a physical condition too. There's no doubt about it, and that's why there's been such efforts in recent years, frankly helped by some of the provisions in Obamacare, to better integrate mental and physical health care.
We're talking to Ron Hohenberg. He is a senior policy advisor at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can find the website at NAMI.org, NAMI.org. We're talking about this issue right now. It's not only Mental Health Month where we're talking about the awareness, but there are serious things that are going on in Congress right now in terms of this. You know, the House has just, you know, has passed the repeal and replace the first steps in repealing and replacing the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, of what's known as Obamacare. And this has some serious consequences, as Ron has been talking about, has some serious consequences on mental health and the impact on the services that people who are having some mental health issues can get. So there are serious consequences that are going on that everybody needs to know about and understand as legislation is being pushed through, and this is going to have an impact. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. George from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about mental health. We've been talking about mental health awareness. It is Mental Health Month right now, a month where we're really trying to put the awareness out there about mental health, how to get treated, you know, how to deal with it. If you've got a family member, maybe yourself, maybe you're a loved one, maybe a friend who's going through something, you know, there's different ways in which people can deal with things. We've come a long way in terms of mental health crisis hotlines, in terms of treatment plans. It is not something that people cannot deal with and address. And we want people to understand that it's so important. That if there's something going on in your life, whether it be temporary or whether it be long term, that there are ways in which you can get help and there are expertise out there for it. We've been talking to the National Alliance on Mental Health, talking to Ron Hohenberg. He is a senior policy advisor for this organization. You can find their website at NAMI.org, which is a great website, got a lot of different resources on there. And we're going to talk about that as we kind of come to the end of the show. But I want to kind of keep on talking about what's going on in the news right now. The House has passed this. Ron really kind of told us the impact. You know, Ron, I mean, you're a policy advisor. You really kind of monitor these issues and advocate for these issues. What's your thoughts in terms of the Senate? I mean, is there a concern? Since this has passed the House, is there a concern that the Senate will continue to push this through? Are you hopeful that the Senate will pick it apart and really kind of say, you know, no, we can't go forward with this? What's your take on this, just kind of being around these issues for a long time?
Well, I mean, the Senate historically and certainly in the last 10 to 20 years has tended to be more deliberative when it comes to these kind of issues, you know, in part because senators represent their entire states, not just a small congressional district. So I'm hopeful that the Senate is going to consider this a lot more carefully than the House seems to have done. You know, Derek, in the political climate we're in right now, there are no sure bets.
Right.
And I think that advocacy groups like NAMI and many of our colleagues around D.C. that represent people with disabilities or people with special health care needs or, you know, people who are poor, we're going to need to work really hard to make sure that our members around the country are activated, that senators hear from their constituents that they don't want the Senate to follow the course that the House has taken today. And, you know, I'm hopeful, but, you know, it's not a sure shot at all. Things have a way these days of changing from minute to minute, as you know.
Definitely. Hey, you know, when you look at this and even kind of taking it down from the congressional level of, you know, the Congress and Senate down to the state level, are you seeing states, you know, in their legislation being more advocate, you know, being more of an advocacy nature towards mental health? Or what are you seeing? Or it really depends on the state and sometimes depends on what side of the coast you're on. I mean, what are you seeing as it gets down to that level?
Well, to some extent, but you know, that's a great question. And actually, you know, there are a number of states with Republican governors or Republican-leaning states that have expanded their Medicaid programs. And so we have Republican governors, thoughtful Republican governors like Governor Kasich from Ohio, for example, who have spoken out and said, you know, have emphasized that many people with mental illnesses and with substance use conditions and with other very severe health care needs have been helped by Medicaid expansion. And they're certainly trying to, you know, they're not necessarily taking the position, don't make any changes, but they are taking the position that be very careful about making changes. I think these states would like the idea of having more flexibility, but certainly want to keep in place a program that allows them to add uninsured people to the Medicaid rolls. Let me say a word about state flexibility for a second. You know, the concern I always have about more state flexibility, I mean, I support it. I think that in many respects, the argument that states and communities are best positioned to understand their needs and how to best address them, that makes sense. But, you know, our experience has been some states do better than others in terms of doing that. So that's the tension that exists right now. And I think that's what the Senate has to sort of grapple with over the coming months.
And, you know, Ron, let me even add into that, because I guess my concern with the state dynamic of and again, I believe in state rights and everything else. But like you're saying, I mean, if one state is doing it great and another state is not, is doing a disservice. And we know that mental health is not a state issue. You know, I mean, there's mental health issues everywhere. There are veterans everywhere. There are people who are dealing with issues everywhere. And so you don't want to have that kind of, you know, broken system that one state is treating people very, very well. Another state is just kind of, you know, really not even dealing with the issue at all. And I think that's the concern that most people have, that it needs to be a federal thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you can find a happy medium. And in fact, that happy medium has always existed in the Medicaid program. So, you know, because Medicaid is a federal state program.
Mm-hmm.
States really have broad discretion to decide how to spend their Medicaid dollars, even though the majority of those dollars in many states come from the federal government. So, and in fact, during the 8 years of the Obama administration, there were a number of state waivers that were issued that were approved by the federal government. States proposing a different approach, states approaching proposing some changes to the rules so that they can make some changes to Medicaid. And oftentimes, those were approved. I think with the new administration, with the Trump administration, we're going to see probably more of these waivers. But considering changes on a state-by-state basis, being able to review them thoughtfully and within the parameters of existing law is one thing. Taking a meat cleaver and gutting a program is quite another. And that's what I'm worried about, the approach that was taken today.
You know, when you look at it from the grassroots levels and kind of taking action on advocacy issues and looking at the dynamics of social media and other things like that, I mean, what do you see that is most effective? Is it the calling the congressman? Is it people getting on social media? I mean, what does your group advocate in terms of letting people understand the issues and the impact and the negative impact that certain legislation may have and in order to, stop maybe some of those changes of gutting something like that?
Yeah, all of the above. So social media is obviously a great tool for reaching lots of people quickly. Sure. And getting people activated. And, we have a very active social media campaign through Twitter and Facebook. And, even though I'm an old guy, I tweet quite a bit, believe mm-hmm. it or not. I hope your listeners are impressed by that. But there's also no substitute for face-to-face contact. So we urge our members, when their members of Congress go back to their communities and have town hall meetings or
if they do these days, I mean, who knows?
If they do, yeah, to try to get in to see them, or even just trying to get an appointment to go mm-hmm. in and see them or their key staff and tell their stories. One of the things we do here is we do advocacy training. So we have a program we call NAMI Smarts, where we, because we've all been in this. When there's something we really feel passionate and emotional about, we're overflowing, and we want to tell everything. But, when you're dealing with people who have maybe a minute or two to listen to you, how you tell your story and what you tell them is so important. So we put a lot of emphasis on that. We urge calls. But sometimes it's hard to reach, your members. My 91-year-old mom, God bless her, she gets all the NAMI alerts, and she said yesterday when she got our alert, she called her congressman in New Jersey, Leonard Lance, and his phone was busy all the time, and she emailed and got a message saying that his email box was filled. That was probably good news, Derek, because it meant that there were a lot of people really flooding him.
Right.
And I believe he voted no today, but I don't know for that for sure. I have to go back and check. So it's all of the above, but members of Congress, frankly, they don't care that much about what they hear from those of us who put on suits and go up and meet with them on the Hill. They care a lot about what their constituents want.
Right.
That's who they listen to. They're the people who are, putting bread on their table and voting for them 2 years or not voting for them.
I want that. That's a very, very important point that you just make. A lot of times people feel like they don't make a difference, that it's the lobbying or different associations or different kind of membership organizations that are making a true difference. But it's really the people in that area, when they go visit that congressman, when they're home, that makes a difference. I mean, those stories and those people getting in front of them makes a huge difference, because that's the voter. That's the person who is going to could really impact that election. And so we got to get that word out to people that, yes, your voice can make a difference. It could be a lone voice, but that lone voice added with other voices starts to ring loud.
It sure does.
And we got to really kind of, impress that upon people real quick. We're talking to Ron Hohnberg. He's a senior policy advisor at an organization called the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can find them at NAMI.org. great site. Take a look at it. A lot of different resources on there, ways to get involved, ways to be an advocate for mental health, ways to find out about how to make it a stigma-free, a situation that we're dealing with in terms of, you know, all of us at some point in time will probably deal with a mental, a mental health challenge at some point in time, whether it be a short-term scenario or whether it be a long-term scenario that needs treatment. But we all deal with challenges at some point in time, and you want to know how to deal with it correctly, that it's not impossible to kind of, you know, cope with these things and do the right thing that's going to help you and go from there. When we're talking about this, we want people to understand what you can do. And we're going to go into the next segment and kind of talk about what resources are out there for veterans, for law enforcement, for people. We want to kind of talk about what NAMNI has out there and what they can point you to when it comes to mental health. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about mental health. It is Mental Health Month, Mental Health Awareness Month. You know, it's really a time period where people can really kind of find out about mental health. And it's really, really such an important topic that we want people to understand. And we've been talking to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, an organization that's out there that's focusing in on mental illness and mental health, advocating for the treatment, advocating for the, you know, the release of the stigma of mental health, and helping sure that making sure that a number of people get treated that they need, whether it be veterans or active duty military, whether it be diverse communities, the LGBT community and LGBTQ community, and everything else. So we're talking to them today. We're talking to Ron Hanberg. He's a senior policy advisor at NAMNI. And then with all this organization, they've been around for a long time trying to bring people together to help people. Ron, what resources are out there? You know, and I'm a veteran, so I'm going to hit the veterans first. You know, we've been talking about PTSD. We've been talking about the mental health challenges in the veteran community. What resources are out there when we look at certain groups?
Well, so, you know, I think the VA has been quite overwhelmed with the numbers of veterans experiencing mental health issues. You know, particularly since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, there's some really tragic figures. I don't know if your listeners are aware that it may be that 20 veterans per day die by suicide every day. And of those 20, 14 of them were not getting care through the VA. That's not all the VA's fault. I mean, right. It's hard sometimes to engage people in treatment, particularly veterans who are oftentimes, you know, have been taught to sort of keep a stiff upper lip and not acknowledge the need for help. But the fact is, the VA has been pretty overwhelmed, and I have to say that we're encouraged that the new secretary, Secretary Shulkin, appointed, you know, by the Trump administration, has taken some good steps, at least in policy. They're preliminary steps, but good steps. For example, one of the phenomenon is the whole area of bad paper discharges. So, you know, veterans are discharged from the active duty military. There's honorable discharge. But sometimes, particularly if someone is experiencing significant symptoms, they may engage in certain behaviors while they're in the military that leads to their being discharged on other than honorable grounds. Sometimes those discharges occur pretty quickly without a lot of deliberation. Then the person's not entitled to or eligible for health care through the VA. And that can be very, very devastating when you're talking about someone who may be very vulnerable. So the secretary has taken a step to address this by allowing people who are given so-called bad paper discharges, grounds other than favorable, honorable, to be eligible for urgent mental health care from the VA under certain circumstances. And, you know, obviously there are some details that have to be worked out, like what does urgent mean? It's currently would be limited to 90 days, but it's at least a step in the right direction. I also want to mention, and this is something that I think will be very interesting to the to your listeners is that, you know, we were actually quite encouraged by the omnibus budget bill that was passed last week, which provides money for the different federal agencies for the rest of fiscal year 2017. A number of programs that are very important to NAMI, the VA got a significant bump up in terms of funding, particularly for the treatment of opioids. I believe it was $50 million of an increase, which is pretty significant. The National Institute of Mental Health, which is responsible for research on a variety of mental health conditions, including post-traumatic stress disorder, et cetera, also got a significant increase, as did the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and including the Mental Health Block Grant, which provides monies to states to provide mental health treatment. So we were really encouraged by that. I would also point out that the President Trump's so-called skinny budget, which is the outline of his budget for fiscal year 2018, called for a 6% increase for the VA for fiscal year 2018. Not necessarily for increases for other mental health programs or for HUD, which is very important, the Department of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, which provides housing for people with disabilities, including mental illnesses. We're also always interested in the Department of Justice budget because there's been a national tragedy, really, that's taken place over the last 10 to 20 years. Yes, we've eliminated a number of psychiatric hospital beds in states, but a lot of the folks who were previously in those beds are now in jails and prisons.
Right.
Many of whom have not committed serious crimes, but have engaged in behaviors that are direct consequence of their untreated mental illnesses. So NAMI puts a lot of emphasis on jail diversion, linking people with treatment instead of incarceration whenever appropriate. And so we're always trying to get resources in the Department of Justice budget to support those programs. Again, happy to say that there were some resources put into the budget for this year that they passed last week, and we'll have to make sure that those increases continue for the next year. Don't know if I was really answering the question you were asking me.
You gave me that and more, Ron.
Okay.
And the beautiful thing is, and unfortunate thing is, we're out of time. So I'm gonna have to have you back if you agree to that, because we want to keep on talking about these issues, because there's so many more resources that, you know, we want to cover. And you have really been a great spokesperson about the issues and what's going on, not only in the politics of it and the policy dynamic of it, but also telling about a number of different resources that people need to know about from different agencies. So we appreciate that. So I'm going to hope you will come back to Fed Access so we can keep on talking about this.
Happy to do it. And I want to applaud you for focusing on these topics.
Thank you so much. We've been talking to Ron Heimberg. He's a senior policy advisor at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Please check out their website, NAMI.org. Great resources on there. We can definitely have Ron back to talk about this some more. We really appreciate him. Please focus in on mental health. If you need the help, get the help. There are resources out there. NAMI is one organization out of many who are out there. Please check out all these crisis hotlines. Please get the help if you need it. Thank you for listening to Fed Access. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.